Good Thursday afternoon, everyone. We have an awesome half hour headed your way. We've got the conference championship round. We have NFL coaching, and we've got a lot more. You're listening to The Hive with Devin Beasley, where you get the buzz on all sports all across the nation. First off, let me apologize for the sound quality from last week. Last episode was much quieter than we anticipated when we uploaded it, but we have that fixed. It should sound much better, and this week should be much more enjoyable to listen to. So the conference championship round of the NFL playoffs is complete. It's over. And now we're on to our two Super Bowl contenders. And guess what? I got upset again. I seem to go 50-50 every round with my predictions, which I guess is okay, but I was hoping for one, just one round, to go 100% with my predictions. But I just can't seem to get that done. This past week, I had two games, went 50%. This week, I only have one game, so let's not go 0%. Let's see what I can do for that. I'd love to guess the correct score as well, but I'll just be happy if the game goes the way that I think it will. So let's get into this. We watched two games this past Sunday, and something very similar happened in both. In both games, you had one team victorious and one team freak out and fall to pieces. Kansas City and Baltimore were absolutely clicking in the first quarter. Mahomes connected with Kelce for Kansas City's first touchdown. Kelce pulled it down to be the first tight end to score on Kyle Hamilton all year. That's all year. So there's no small feat there. And then Lamar connected with Zay Flowers deep in the end zone for Baltimore's first touchdown. Early in the second, Pacheco got a touchdown on the ground to pull Kansas City ahead. And they never really looked back from there. Now, both defenses played fairly well this game, but after the first quarter, the Ravens' offense just couldn't hold. They started to trust Lamar's arm more, and that just wasn't going to work. Once again, this is a team that stepped away from the run when it was effective against Kansas City, especially the Ravens. It's more concerning because they have the best rushing offense, or they had, because their season's over, the best rushing offense in the league. And guess what the Chiefs have? The worst rushing defense. Abandoning the run ruins the game for you. It happened with Buffalo. It's now happened with Baltimore. If you abandon the run when you're playing Kansas City, you're going to lose the game. Both of these teams held their own when they were running the ball. They were actually beating them when they were running the ball. And then they fall back on the arms of their quarterbacks, which I've said before, works some of the time. But when you have something that's effective, don't go back on it. Let it work. Let it chip away. But congrats to the Chiefs. Congrats to the Kansas City fans. And congrats to Taylor Swift. Earlier this year, I said no Taylor Swift magic. They were going to lose in the second round. And now they're on to the Super Bowl. They've made yet another one. Patrick Mahomes has continued to defend his title as the best quarterback in the NFL. And now I'd say he's cemented himself as one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. Slow down. I'm not quite comparing him to Tom Brady yet. But man, does he make it hard on a weekly basis. He was drafted in 2017, and since then, he's had three Super Bowl appearances. It's going to be four Super Bowl appearances in a couple of weeks. It was 2020, 2021, 2023, and now 2024. He's won two of those. And the only one he lost was to Tom Brady himself when Tom was in Tampa Bay. The more impressive thing about all of this is all done by the age of 28. The guy's not even 30, and he's got four Super Bowl appearances. He's one of the youngest quarterbacks to ever start in a Super Bowl. And now he could go win a 70. He could have a 75% win percentage in the Super Bowl overall. Before the age of 30. Four Super Bowls. That's crazy. The Lions and 49ers game was a bit up and down. The Lions jumped out to a decent lead in the first half, and then they utterly collapsed. At the end of said first half, their score was 24-10. So explain to me why, when you're up that much, at the beginning of the second half, in the third quarter, Dan Campbell has to call for a fourth down conversion attempt on fourth and two. Not only that, but it's fourth and two, and he doesn't put it on the ground. He goes, hey, Jared Goff, I'm going to have you throw the ball. Goff and Reynolds don't connect, and that's what caused the momentum to start swinging in San Francisco's way. And look, I get it. The Lions' offense has converted on fourth a ton. They actually lead the league in fourth down conversions. But come on. Unless the game is on the line, when you're up that much, that's not the time and place in the playoffs to go for a play like that. That's just a gamble that's, to be quite frank, kind of inappropriate for the situation. You're up. You had a chance to just kick a field goal, go up by three possessions, and then the pressure's really on Kansas City. Just punt the ball away, let your defense get settled, and continue to play for a Super Bowl. The minute that throw went incomplete, your entire offense got into their own head. Then San Francisco capitalizes and scores a touchdown, and your entire defense gets in their own head. For that second half, you then had a helmet ricochet for a touchdown, a botched handoff resulting in a fumble, and an incomplete pass late game. It's not necessarily anybody's fault, you know, anybody's direct fault. The entire team collapsed, but it's one of the worst collapses in a playoff game I've seen in recent times. I think the only one that really kind of beats it is the Atlanta collapse in the Super Bowl in 2017. As bad as that was, though, you know, three or four mistakes, the Lions weren't that far away. I think it's been a good learning experience for Detroit as a whole. They outplayed every expectation this season. I mean, they had to be up on people's list for most entertaining football teams to watch this year. I know they were on mine. They'll come back stronger next year. And the league better not underestimate them again, because they're not going to make the same mistakes again. We've seen it this year. If you underestimate Detroit, they'll take you to the playoffs and they'll make you sweat. So just be careful. So now we have the Super Bowl. Two teams enter, and one team will leave a champion. Right now, to be 100% honest, I don't know if San Francisco can beat Kansas City this year. I mean, Kansas City has had the toughest road out of any team this year in the playoffs. They had Miami, and then you follow up with the headache Buffalo gave them, and then you had to fight your way through Baltimore. Patrick Mahomes is fighting for the GOAT title at this point. Like I said, I'm not comparing him to Tom Brady yet, but he's getting there. And the more times he visits the Super Bowl, that's just going to help his case the closer he's going to get. Kansas City just has one big weakness: the run game. It's the one thing Buffalo and Baltimore abandoned that had them beat. And San Francisco has one of the best rushers in the league in Christian McCaffrey. If they can keep him going, San Francisco can and will win the Super Bowl. But they have to lean on the run. Do not stop using it in the second half. We've seen it twice before. That's how Kansas City has won those games. You abandon that run game, Kansas City's coming back and they're going to win. There's not exactly a way to contain Patrick Mahomes, but like we've realized, he's got the worst receiving core he has had in his entire career, and he's literally put this team on his back and pulled them this far. And let's be honest, this Niners O-line can't slouch. They have got to work hard. They can't let Purdy get pressured too much, because he does get uncomfortable at times, and it shows. For right now, I'll stick with my prediction from a few weeks ago. I'm going to stick with San Francisco to win and the score of 24-17, so it'll be close. But I'm not going to be surprised at all if Mahomes and crew find a way to close it. I saw two headlines from Bleacher Report earlier this week that caught my eye. The first was Bill Belichick stating he wants to coach on his own terms in 2025. He's pretty much removed himself from 2024. This explains to me why Bill Belichick didn't get a job this offseason. He wants to coach on his own terms. That means no one wanted to hand him complete reign of the sideline. He wanted a wide range of power in Atlanta, and Arthur Blank didn't want to relinquish that power to him. You know, we're kind of in the era of the NFL where head coaches aren't going to have as much power as they used to. In fact, any time things start to go south for an NFL team, guess who gets the boot first? Right. It's the head coach. You know, every coach out here, yeah, there are coaches. They have the playbook. But they're really scapegoats for the GMs and the ownership around the league when something goes wrong. There are very few coaches who are safe in the event of a rebuild or even a retooling. Now, Bill Belichick was even, you know, one of the guys who wasn't safe. I wouldn't imagine him on the sideline with anybody else but New England. And now it's going to be very difficult to find a team that's going to give him the control he wants in order for him to be willing to coach. The second headline was Jerry Jones saying he sees the Cowboys and Belichick working together some point in the future. And this sounds kind of crazy to me, especially because Jerry Jones holds the majority of the power in Dallas. We go back to that he wants to coach under his own, you know, power or on his own terms. You know, to be quite honest, Jerry Jones just needs to come out and say that he's the GM. He's not going to relinquish that power. He makes all the decisions, pulls all of the strings in Dallas. He is the GM. There's not a whole lot of coaches out there who are going to want to deal with that kind of operation, be under Jerry Jones' thumb the whole season. But the Bill Belichick possibility is why I would say McCarthy won't get an extension with Dallas and didn't get an extension with Dallas. Jerry Jones came out and said that he has to earn it. But that, to me, that just means Jerry wants to replace McCarthy with Belichick. And we all thought Belichick was going to coach the Falcons. There were some heavy implications when those meetings started. And when that fell through, Jerry's gotten stuck waiting for Belichick. Because, like I said, heavy implications to go to the Falcons. So Jerry went, okay, we're not going to fire McCarthy because it looks like Bill Belichick is going to be off the market. Well, now he's gotten stuck. The only good thing going for it is Dallas is a win-now team. It wouldn't be a rebuild or a major retooling. It'd be a minor retooling, if anything. So it's definitely different from Atlanta. That's something Belichick wants. He wants a win-now team, like I said. Get out from under the I can't win without Tom Brady moniker. So we'll keep a close eye on this situation. I expect more headlines to come through the offseason with this kind of possibility and on into next season. Mike McCarthy is on a really hot seat, and I don't think it's too far-fetched that we may at some point see Belichick on the sideline there for Dallas. But we'll just keep an eye out and see what happens. So now it's time for our two-minute drill where we listen to you. And honestly, I didn't have a comment this week to use, so I'm just going to share something with you this week. I watched the Royal Rumble this past weekend, and honestly, I was extremely entertained. One of the biggest nights for WWE, it's also one of the most chaotic. It was almost hard to keep track of how many people and who was where in the ring and who was fighting who. Cody Rhodes just barely beat CM Punk to take the men's division win. I half expected CM Punk to take it, but Cody Rhodes pulled it out. Bayley won the women's division. My favorite thing to see was Pat McAfee. I love Pat McAfee. He was just the guest commentator up until his music started playing. He had no idea he was going to be in the Royal Rumble. So he gets up to get in the ring, rushes over there, steps up, climbs up onto the top rope, and who's there to meet him? Omos. For those of you who don't keep track of the WWE, don't know who Omos is, he is 7'3", 416 pounds. Pat McAfee looked tiny compared to Omos. It took Pat, he went like this. He climbed up there, got in. They had a stare down, and then he climbed back out. Hung on to the ropes, didn't touch the floor, and then he climbed back in and almost started to rush Omos, and then climbed right back out, and then he eliminated himself from the Rumble. Funniest part is he got back to the table and he was hollering to the other commentators, "Now, why did you guys let me go in there? He's huge. I don't stand a chance." He was not trying to wrestle Omos. It was the funniest thing I had seen all evening. And folks, remember, if you want to be featured on our next 2-minute drill, leave a comment under this episode on the Podbean app, or leave us a comment on our Facebook, The Hive with Devin Beasley, or message us on Instagram at TheHiveDB. That's at THEHIVEDB. We want to hear from you. Leave us a comment and make yourself heard. Keep leaving comments week to week. We'll get to them as soon as possible, get to as many as we can. Everyone, we are finally starting to see the Phoenix Suns' Kevin Durant trade payoff. I got to tell you, I was concerned to begin with. Phoenix struggled. I was thinking this was just another Kevin Durant team that just wasn't going to work out. But they've really started clicking, especially the big three of Durant, Booker, and Beal. I watched the Suns play the Pacers earlier this week, and they looked incredible together. The three of them combined for 91 points, spearheaded by Durant's 40. You want to know how many points the rest of the Suns had? 29. 29 points. The Pacers almost got beat by three guys this past Friday. When the Suns' big three is on point, they're unguardable. I mean, we've seen Kevin Durant in other big three situations, and they just didn't work. In Brooklyn, James Harden didn't want to be the third option and didn't want to get into shape, so he demanded a trade. In Golden State, yeah, he won two titles, but he couldn't get along with other guys there. He couldn't find his place on their team, so he left. Even back when he played for the Thunder, I feel like he had left a year too early. If he had hung around for another year with Russ Ibaka and Steven Adams, he'd have had a ring in OKC. But this Phoenix team, when they're healthy, they're unstoppable offensively. There's not a whole lot of drama surrounding them, and they look like a finals-ready team now. They've won 9 out of their last 11 games. They just need to figure out some of their rotations a bit better. They're a bit deeper than some of the other teams out there, just a few kinks to work out. I love Bol Bol's growing confidence off the bench. A healthy Bol Bol and a confident Bol Bol can be huge for the Suns. I still don't think we've seen his true potential, and if they can unlock that potential a bit more, he'll be a great piece that can be a starting caliber guy one day. But look, it's time to cut Kevin Durant some slack now. He's put up with enough hate over the years. We all hated him for leaving Oklahoma City and going to the Warriors. I get that. It was a classless case of if you can't beat him, join him. And like I said, I think he would have lifted the Larry O'Brien trophy regardless that year, whether it was the Thunder or Golden State that he was with. He just moved on from the Thunder too quick to see that. And that was a fairly young Oklahoma City Thunder team too. There may have been multiple finals trophies headed his way if he had just stuck with them. But he didn't. He fell to the dark side of the force. He was supposed to be the chosen one. He was supposed to stop the Warriors dynasty, not join them. But he wanted to bring threes, titles, and immortality to what he thought was his new dynasty. A little Star Wars reference for all the movie buffs out there. Golden State doesn't work out after a few years, and Kevin goes, "Okay, I'm going to go to Brooklyn. Not only will I go to Brooklyn, but I'm going to team up with one of the most controversial guys in the league at the time, and that was Kyrie Irving. There's a lot of drama there. Then we'll add James Harden to the mix, who's a guy who hadn't learned to be a second or third option yet. In fact, he still struggles with that a bit to this day." And I'll be frank here. The James Harden rental that didn't even last a full year was probably one of the worst trades for a star I've seen in recent times. You gave up young talent and a ton of picks in a three-team trade for a four-month rental of James Harden. But even with Harden, it didn't work for Kevin Durant in Brooklyn. Even healthy, when they played together, I never saw that team as a team that would beat the Bucks or beat the Lakers or any of those finals competitors out there. So now Kevin Durant's in Phoenix. This is probably his best spot since his Golden State days. And this is the first time in a while that I've watched a Kevin Durant-led team and went, wow. This is a team that can win a finals with Kevin Durant as a leader. Chris Paul's not there anymore. Devin Booker's hungry to get back to the finals. Bradley Beal wants a chance at one. And they've all gone about it in the, quote, right way. There's no drama there right now. They're just focused on basketball and winning championships. And Kevin Durant is at the helm. That's something I never thought I would say, is Kevin Durant would be leading a team. Kevin Durant is leading this team. A lot of people have a bit of a problem with the NBA right now. And the problem they're having is the injury policy for awards. The NBA has set it in place where a player must play 65 games to win an award or be eligible for an All-NBA team. And now we have the first two superstars at risk of losing their eligibility for those awards. I'm not counting Ja Morant. He was out of it to begin with. Tyrese Haliburton, and here's the really big one, Joel Embiid, who a lot of people consider a lock for MVP. Both of them are down to their last three games, meaning they can't miss more than two games before they're ineligible for awards. Haliburton hurt his hamstring and hasn't played since, and Joel Embiid has been facing injuries all year. And now, I get it may hurt not to see your favorite player win an award, but I'm all for this rule. If we didn't have this rule, we'd have guys that play 20 games winning all NBA awards. Shoot, we almost had Zion Williamson win Rookie of the Year, and he didn't even play half of his rookie season. That's not right. I get he was injured, but you're asking the NBA to give the award to guys who sometimes don't play the whole year. I'm sure the NBA will come up with an exception to the rule. But once you allow guys to get awards when missing large chunks of the season, it promotes those rest clauses. And those are exactly like what we saw with Kawhi Leonard, what he had with his early days with the Clippers. He had it in his contract that he could miss up to X amount of games and he would not play in back-to-backs. You know, Adam Silver doesn't want that. He wants to maximize revenue for the league. And look, I can excuse a few games here and there of rest. Injuries are a different story. Of rest games, I can excuse, you know, 3-4 games of rest. But when you have guys resting for 20 to 30 games a season, NBA basketball kind of starts to lose his magic a bit, especially when one of those players that rest makes a serious run at an award, missing 20 to 30 games a season. So the clash at the Coliseum is coming this weekend. NASCAR fans, this season is almost upon us. Time to crack open a cold one on the couch every Sunday afternoon and watch some racing, boys and girls. Let's get into some predictions here. I know this race is something fun just to have at the beginning of the season, but it's just as competitive as any other race. And, you know, let's just applaud NASCAR for getting them into a stadium and making it work. I couldn't think of how it would work when they first announced that the Clash was going to be at the Coliseum, but NASCAR did it, and I've enjoyed it ever since. So here we go, my top picks for the Clash. I know the lineups aren't set yet, but I'm going to jump the gun and do this anyway. Number one is Martin Truex Jr. He's won a heat race before at the Clash. After the disappointing season he's had last year, he wants to come out aggressive and shake the dust off of the steering wheel. This very well could be the last year of Truex's career. It seems to take him longer and longer to decide whether he's going to retire each year. You know, if this is his last year, he's going to want to go out on a high note, and that's going to start at the Clash. Number two is Ryan Blaney. This goes back to my Daytona 500 predictions. Ryan Blaney doesn't want to have the, quote, championship hangover stereotype placed on him this year. I think the Fords are going to start the season better than any other manufacturer. So look for him to come out or come after that checkered flag. And he's going to be like a shark in the water. He's going to smell blood and he's going to go after it. He'll move people out of the way if he needs to. He's going to be real aggressive, but I expect him out front to begin with. Number three, Ryan Preece. This comes as a surprise to some people, but Ryan Preece races really well at short tracks. Martinsville Spring Race last year, he started on pole and led 135 laps before losing the lead. Stuart Haas Racing is trying to prove that they're not on a downward slope. They're young, but I think Priest could get it done at the Coliseum. I'm watching him to be an early competitor here. Number four, Chase Elliott. Chase missed multiple races last year due to injury. He wants to come out and make some noise early, let everyone know he's back at full capacity. So be on alert for him not only to win here, but also to be a championship contender late in the season. Number five, Justin Haley. Justin is my dark horse pick here. He's run well at the Clash before until his car got destroyed when he got put in a wall. His new team is trying to show NASCAR that they're committed to improving, and they can prove it with Haley running full-time this year. He's my dark horse winner. So there you go. That's my top five for the Clash this weekend. I do love the Coliseum, but something else I've wondered about is the possibility of NASCAR going to different, smaller, less used tracks for the Clash. Like, what if they can run the Clash at Norks Wilkesboro 1 year? It's been successful as a location for the All-Star Race. How about giving it another big event race? What about Rockingham? I think NASCAR needs to kind of explore these possibilities. The Clash and the All-Star Race can be a great way to bring attention back to older tracks or bring attention to smaller, kind of lesser-known venues. I want to thank all of you for joining me today. Super Bowl is coming up. We'll be able to dissect that soon. NASCAR season is starting. Man, there's a lot of good things coming our way in the world of sports. Wherever you are, however you're listening, thank you. This show, quite frankly, isn't possible without each and every person's support. We're off to a hot start this year, and it's only going to get better. You can find us on Facebook at The Hive with Devin Beasley or on Instagram at The Hive DB. That's at THEHIVEDB. Check us out on the Podbean app or visit our website, thehivedb.podbean.com. The Hive DB is spelled the same way as our Instagram handle there. I want to give a special shout out to Brittany Stalker for our logo design. You can find her at A Shadows Art on Instagram. That's at A-S-H-A-D-O-W-S-A-R-T on Instagram. And check out the rest of her past, present, and future projects. And again, to all of our listeners, thank you for joining us today. You have been listening to The Hive with Devin Beasley, where you get the buzz on all sports all across the nation. I'll catch you guys next Thursday.